$8 to the half by 7.5, 30. Hit $30 down here to the half by 35, 7.5, 40. Hit $40 to the half by.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant
Hit
Radio.
$300. Hit $3.25. Hit $3.25 now. Half, 3.5.
You know,
yeah, but a four, if, four and a quarter. Four
if
and a half,
I did this show that fast, quarter, we could be done in an hour. We could take 3 hours and compress it into 1 hour.
I know someone that listens to audio at three times the normal
really?
Speed. Three times. And so I heard him listening to a podcast, and it sounded like the Chipmunks. I'm like, what are you listening to? It's like, oh, I just like it that way. He goes, you know, I get through it faster. But you can't even understand what they're saying. They're talking so fast.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I mean, can understand. Okay.
It's like speed reading. Some people can do it. Other people, they, you know, they're more plodding. So.
Oh, I had serious, I didn't believe speed reading was real. I was just like, you're just skipping over whole sentences or paragraphs. Mm-hmm. And my wife had a really good friend that was a speed reader. And she read the Harry Potter books in, it was like a couple of days, all of them. Mm. And I was like, there's no way you retained any of this knowledge. And she was like, all right, test me. And so I grabbed random books and I just opened up to pages and she could tell me everything that was going on.
Wow.
It was incredible.
That is impressive.
Recall. Yep. Very, very smart lady.
Wow. I don't know what to make of that. I understand that you can train for that.
You can so you don't read that fast? Because an avid reader.
I am, I admit that. I tend to be much more, you know, I read much slower because I want to retain what I'm reading. But I've always had the same impression that people who are just, you see their fingers sort of moving back and forth down the page very quickly, that they're not really picking up very much of that. So
right.
Retention is very important. So that's why I tend to read more slowly. But if I could read faster and retain it at the same level, I would do that because then I could get through
up.
More books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mentioned baby formula a few minutes ago, and I didn't get a chance to talk about that in the last hour. So let me just mention it now. This is an article in CNN that stores are having trouble restocking baby formula. Now, this is part of a bigger picture about the supply chain problems and other reasons why a lot of staples are now not easy to find in grocery stores. I was in my local grocery store just a couple of days ago, and I was, you know, I'm paying attention now. I didn't used to ever think about it, but now I'm looking around, and I notice large gaps in like the meat section, you know, just empty shelves. And this is a, you know, this is Kroger. So this is a big Kroger, by the way. So they always seem to be stocked to the gills with anything you might need. It's there. It's always there. And now it's not. So I'm noticing that in the meat section and in other sections too, there's like a limited supply. And I've even started asking some of the people who work at these stores, hey, how come, you know, is it just me or are the products sort of harder to get and fewer of them? And they all say, yeah, we're having a hard time getting some of these things. So I offered this to you if you have a baby in the home and maybe you're using formula or maybe you're, you know, you care about a family who's got a baby. Well, the formula issue is becoming a problem. Drugstore chains like Walgreens, for example. Walgreens operates more than 9,000 locations around the United States. They've said that the infant formula is increasing, the demand rather for infant formula is decreasing nationwide. At the same time that suppliers are struggling to quickly meet orders. Now, what's interesting, and this is not in the article, I'll just insert this, it's not increasing nationwide because there are more babies. There aren't more babies. You know, it's not as though there's some huge baby boom and suddenly now they've got an extra demand for baby formula. It's not that, but they're experiencing temporary and isolated shortages for the moment. They're worried about whether or not they're going to be able to get enough baby formula going forward. A spokesman for Walgreens says we're restocking stores as quickly as possible and continuing to work diligently with our supplier partners to best meet customer demands. And this is across all brands. It's not just like Similac or whatever the other name brands are. It's been so long since we've ever had to buy baby formula that I don't remember. I remember Similac, though. But one of the reasons that this really jumped out at me, and I never really thought about this before, but one of the reasons is theft. Theft is, it accounts for a big problem with, if you go into Walgreens or one of the other drugstores or even a grocery store for that matter, if you're not finding the kind of volume and the kind of variety of baby formula, one of the reasons is theft. Let me give you some statistics here. A 2020 survey of 61 retailers from the National Retail Federation, the industry's largest trade group, shows that organized retail theft has jumped nearly 60% from 2015, and it costs stores an average of $719,000 per $1 billion in sales. So not quite $1 million per $1 billion in sales, but you know, that's a significant chunk of change. Organized retail crime involves a gang of people who steal entire shelves of products such as cosmetics, baby formula, clothing, etc. And this is not for their own personal consumption, but they resell these things at a profit. Yeah, I'm pretty confident that the gang of people that goes into the CVS or the Walgreens and steals all the baby formula, this is a regular occurrence. I'm pretty sure they're not going back home and chugging all that baby formula. Pretty confident. Among the most stolen items from stores are designer clothes, laundry detergent, razors, deodorant, and baby formula. And baby formula accounts for 13% of the most stolen items from stores. And this according to a series of different surveys. In August, a couple in Shelby County, Alabama, pleaded guilty to selling more than $300,000 worth of stolen baby formula online. A spokesman for the trade group Retail Industry Leaders Association says infant formula has become a top item for thieves because it's easy to quickly resell. Increasingly, we are seeing instant formula resold online. Theft is certainly a factor contributing to the shortages given the rise in theft that retailers have been experiencing. And as I recall, Cyrus, I think in California, if it's under $1,000, they're not even going to call the police because the police are not going to file charges. They're not going to go after somebody. So
that's a lot of baby formula.
That's a lot of baby formula or whatever you're stealing. So I guess the thieves know that if they steal below the certain dollar amount, they can walk out with it. And there are even videos circulating on social media of people brazenly going in to like a Walgreens and filling up their grocery cart with all the stuff they want. And then they just wheel it out and off they go. And what are the retailers going to do? So
they're going to close down.
Some of them are. In certain neighborhoods where this is going on, they just say, okay, they just pull the plug. We're going to close the store.
I know Walgreens has done that in a few neighborhoods. They're we're out.
Mm-hmm. I have one other thing to complain about, and I want to go to the phones after that. The number 888-914-9149. This strikes me as wrong. I get the idea behind it, and I can understand maybe some good motivations, but I still think it's wrong. They have a Miss Holocaust Survivor pageant in Israel. An 86-year-old woman who survived the mass roundups and massacres of Jews as a child in Romania was crowned Israel's Miss Holocaust Survivor. This was last Tuesday. 10 women in their 80s and 90s took part in the special pageant sponsored by a local foundation, and it's meant to bring members of Israel's rapidly dwindling population of Holocaust survivors some joy and recognition. That part I like. You know, that's a good thing. The women were treated by professional makeup artists and hairdressers and stylists throughout the day before the evening competition. A number of local celebrities, they served as judges. And, you know, there's some entertainment before they crowned the winner. According to the pageant organizers, Mrs. Steinfeld moved to Israel in 1948. She married and raised three children. She has 7 grandchildren and 21 great-grandchildren. She's very happy. She had a lot of nice things to say. Israel is home to an aging population of some 175,000 people who survived the Holocaust when an estimated 6 million Jews were killed by Nazi Germany and its collaborators. The pageant is sponsored by Yad Ezer Lahaver, which is a helping hand. It's a local foundation that provides services to Holocaust survivors. Because all this is good. Okay, I have no quarrel with that. But maybe I'm just taking this the wrong way. But it seems strange to me to trivialize the Holocaust by having a Miss Holocaust Survivor pageant. That's the part that I don't cotton to. Now, I'm not Jewish. I'm not a Holocaust survivor. I don't live in Israel, so I don't really have any standing, you know. And I would think that if this really were something bothersome, the people there would be bothered by it. But just as an onlooker, I mean, I think it's good if you're going to honor somebody or if you're going to recognize somebody or do something nice in that way, I'm all in favor of that. But to term it Miss Holocaust Survivor, to my mind, seems to trivialize everything about it. So, okay, I'm done complaining. That's my story. You can take a look at that on the show Twitter feed at P Madrid Show. And also everything that I talk about, book recommendations, articles, etc., those things are all posted on the show page, which is relevantradio.com/Patrick. Let's go to Victor now in Simi Valley, California. Hi, Victor.
Hi, Patrick. And I just want to say I appreciate everything you and Cyrus do
Thank you.
In answering questions. I have a question about the validity of my confirmation.
Okay.
I'm a middle aged now, and I'm trying to get deeper into my faith. But I remembered, I don't know why, the other day I was thinking about it. When I got confirmed in high school, my confirmation sponsor was actually my friend Frankie. He was a year older than I was in high school. And I have to tell you, I didn't take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, excuse me, I remember, sorry, I got something in my throat here.
Mm-hmm. Were you in the state of mortal sin when you got confirmed?
Oh, confirmed?
Yeah, we're talking about your confirmation.
No, Patrick. Yeah, oh, well, during the confirmation, I mean, I would maybe say that I was, because I didn't take it seriously. And I remember we had we had a sit down with the priest, and Frankie was speaking about, you know, what a change he saw in me during the confirmation process and everything. And honestly, mm-hmm. we kind of treated it as a joke,
mm-hmm.
and we thought it was funny because, you know, he was just kind of making stuff up, and I'm trying not to laugh and whatnot. And so now I'm thinking back on my confirmation and thinking about how I really didn't take it seriously. I was 16,
mm-hmm.
and I'm worried that it wasn't a valid confirmation, or that,
okay,
you know, I don't know what your thoughts are on something like that.
I can help you, and I think I can put your mind to rest. So that's why I asked if you were in the state of mortal sin when you were confirmed, because this would perhaps be the most common scenario where that would come into question. So the sacrament of confirmation becomes automatically, it's valid, but not spiritually fruitful if you're in the state of mortal sin. In other words, you're validly confirmed, but you don't receive any spiritual benefit from it. But as soon as you make a good sacramental confession and you are back in the state of grace, then all of the spiritual benefit of the sacrament of confirmation becomes present in you at that point.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever even thought about confessing this, but my next confession, I'm going to talk to the priest about it,
mm-hmm.
and just to bring it up. Because I also know right now, it just as an aside, I have diagnosed obsessive compulsive disorder, and I tend to really start focusing on things like this. And, mm-hmm. and if I can just ask too, if you can just pray for me for that, because I
certainly
tell my wife, but due to my OCD, sometimes it makes me start doubting my faith and starts doubting kind of everything that I believe. And
well, let me ask you a question.
I want to be.
Yeah, I can imagine the struggle. So in the intervening years since you were a teenager, I'm guessing that you probably have gone to confession many times and have made good sacramental confessions many times since then, right?
I don't know about the many times, but yeah, I've gone.
Sometimes?
You know, that's why I'm trying to get back into my faith, but I have been trying to go recently more to confession. So yeah, right. just being honest there.
Yeah, sure. So the reason I'm saying that is because however many times you went to confession, the fact is if you genuinely didn't realize, or you had forgotten, truly forgotten, something that would have been a serious sin and you didn't confess it, those are still good, valid confessions. But when you remember, oh my gosh, that I did that thing that one time, or I did that thing, you know, however many times, and I forgot about it, and I've never really confessed it. When you go to confession again, then just mention it and just say, this was lost in my memory banks. I forgot about it, and I'm just now remembering it, and I want to confess it. And then you've left it at the foot of the cross, and you know it's forgiven.
Well, thank you, Patrick. Oh, and if I can, one more quick mm-hmm. question.
Sure.
As far as having like OCD, I mean, it's, I don't want to get too far into it, but I get very unwanted, intrusive thoughts. Some of them, you know, sometimes blasphemous or or danger, you know, things that, that scare me or whatever. And when those moments when I start really doubting, you know, feels like I'm doubting my faith and I question everything, is that, I have to tell my wife, I don't want to be damned to hell, you know, for a lack of faith or.
Well, remember that intrusive thoughts, whether they're from some clinically diagnosed disorder, or if they're from the devil, or if they are from some other source, or it could be a combination of things, those are not sins. So temptation is not a sin. If you have thoughts in your mind or intrusive ideas and things, they're not things that you yourself are choosing. It would only become, or could only become, sinful if you say yes to it and then start cooperating with it. A million temptations do not equal one sin. You would need to consent to it, you know, in a free, and here too, there's another thing. Your freedom, it seems to me, is somewhat impaired because of this condition. So if the condition is something that's beyond your control and you're just trying to live with it, God understands that, and you know, should there even be any culpability at any point, that would be diminished because you can't control that. So don't worry that when you have these intrusive thoughts or these temptations that come to your mind, those aren't sins. Okay, just push them away and keep pushing them away.
Yeah, it feels like it really attacks my faith, and I do have a problem with faith. I know trust and everything is very difficult. I think I don't know how much of it is my condition or my personality, but yeah, I just, you know, that brings me comfort. So thank you very much.
You know what you can do. You're welcome.
I just ask for your continued prayers.
You got them. And one thing I can recommend quite confidently, Victor, is just say the prayer from the Divine Mercy Chaplet over and over again. Just, Jesus, I trust in you. Mm-hmm. Jesus, I trust in you. And if you start having these thoughts about maybe you're not going to be saved, or that maybe you're losing your faith, or that whatever it may be, just keep that prayer at the ready and just say, Jesus, I trust in you. Jesus, I trust in you. And he hears you, and he's helping you, even if it doesn't feel like it in the moment. But just little prayers like that, just, you know, use those to fight against the thoughts that come into your mind. And I think it will make it easier for you. It'll make it a little bit better.
Well, thank you, Patrick. I really appreciate that. Thank you. That brings me comfort.
Hang in there, Victor. And if you can, get some, you know, get some therapy, get some counseling. I don't know if you've done that yet, but there are plenty of good Catholic therapists and counselors who can help walk you through this and give you some other strategies and tools.
Sure. I do have a really good Catholic counselor, and you know, and I take medication, and I have a doctor that I see for this condition. So yeah, I'm just kind of in the middle of an episode. That's all. It doesn't happen all the time, every couple of years. But yeah, it's just, it goes kind of a rough period. That's all.
Well, you can count on our prayers, Victor, and just, Jesus, I trust in you. Keep saying that. And we will be praying for you. Thanks for the call. I know what we're going to do now. We're going to take a break. My number is 888-914-9149. There's time for you to get in. You know, you got about 25 minutes or thereabouts. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Have a question?
Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. Let's go to Juan in San Jose, California. Good morning, Juan.
Yeah, good morning. I'm sorry. I'm surprised.
It's okay.
Hey, Pat. I got a quick question. I had a friend of mine that is also troubles, and she was talking about his parents and the things that she can feel in the rooms or the noise. So I recall a couple of years ago you shared your prayer. I would like to, if I can find it or guide me to it or tweet it or share it again so I can share this part with her too. So you can listen later.
Which prayer was that now? I'm blanking.
The one that you, when you used to go to, traveling, and you were the first time going to that room in a hotel, and you were mentioning that the lights will
Okay. Yeah. It wasn't one particular prayer. So I prayed the Our Father, I prayed the Hail Mary, I prayed the St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. So I was praying a number of prayers. It wasn't just one single prayer. But I was praying out loud, and I was praying against whatever it was that was trying to harass me that way. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and mention that to her and let her try that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, is she having issues like that? Is it where she lives?
Yeah,
or what's going on?
No. When she goes to visit her mom at her home, and she's been there like five, six times during the period of the 5 years, and she feels that every time she goes to her room, and she said, I feel there's a presence of something. Mm-hmm. I feel one time somebody touched me in the back, and I feel some movement in the closet. So I open it up. There's nothing. Everything's in the same place. And one time she felt like a box fell off, and it did fell off on the closet where it can be from the shelf. It's impossible. Somebody had to move it. And she's going back tomorrow. She says, hey, can you help me out? And I recall that Patrick has some similar issues like that. Let me go ahead and give her a call. Maybe have something for us.
Here's what I would do. So this sounds like something really is going on there. It's not just her imagination. Sometimes it is just your imagination. So if I were her, I would stop at her local parish, and if she's got a little plastic holy water bottle, fill it up with holy water, get it at the parish. And then when she goes to that house, and especially when she goes into that room, she should sprinkle the room with holy water and pray some prayers of deliverance. You know, Lord, please send your holy angels to protect me. And, you know, if there are any evil spirits in this area, please banish them. And she could even maybe set up a little crucifix or something in the room just to put everything on notice that she follows Jesus. And very often, the use of holy water will be sufficient to prevent that from happening in the future. She could also maybe see if it would be okay with your mom if a priest could come over at some point and bless the house and go through each of the rooms with holy water and bless each of the rooms. We've had our house blessed many times over the years. It's a very good thing to do. These are all things that she can do, countermeasures that she can take that can help to quell that problem if that's what's going on.
Great. We'll do that. I'll share that with her today, and then we'll go ahead and...
Great. And remember, too, as the Bible says, greater is he who is in us than he who is in the world. So Jesus, obviously being God, is stronger than Satan. So just remind her of her devotion to Jesus, and that ultimately is far more of a protection than anything that the evil one could do to her. You know, for what it's worth, I travel a fair amount, and I do a lot of conferences and seminars around the country. And very often I'll have a little plastic vial of holy water with me. And when I go into a hotel room, it's not uncommon for me to bless the hotel room briefly with holy water, because who knows what may have gone on in that given hotel room at some point. You know, over the years, things happen. And if there's any spiritual residue, so to speak, left over where maybe some diabolical infestation or attachment or something like that, I just use holy water as a reminder of my own baptism and victory over death in Jesus Christ. But also, I use it as a reminder for any evil spirits that might be lingering that they're not welcome there. So I encourage people to have some holy water with them. It's a great tool. It's a great weapon, if you want to think of it that way. Thanks, Juan. Let's go now to Barbara in San Diego. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Patrick.
Hi.
This morning you started talking about divorce with a couple other women. You've spoken about it. Man with a sound mind, and you have a lot of years being married. I'm coming to you because I have been married for 39 years.
Okay.
I have separated from my husband because after so many years, we developed issues.
Barbara, do me a favor. Can you speak closer to the phone? Because I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Oh, I'm so sorry. So maybe I need to speak louder. Does that help?
That's better, Gal. Thanks.
Okay. So after 38, 39 years being married to my husband. I separated in December of last year. Mm-hmm. And I know you have been married a long time and you have a big family and you are very sound in your thinking. So I want to ask you, after being separated and having my husband approach me to reconcile, I don't know if I need to return to him and my home and carry my cross, or should I face reality and look at those issues and say, I have to give in to them and follow through with my divorce because they are big issues. And I'm afraid to go either way. I'm nervous. I'm like being pulled in both directions now. And mm-hmm. I want to be a good wife. I want to, you know, I don't really look forward to my divorce, but, you know, I just want to hear from, I've approached my family. We've gone to therapists. I've approached my friends and, I'm just searching for the mm-hmm. right answer.
I understand. So, I understand. I can hear it in your voice. Well, may I ask a couple of questions, Barbara? Was he violent towards you?
He was at first, and then it stopped. And then there was some other mental abuse, and he developed issues where he's really into alcohol and going away from me and keeping secrets. And so I didn't know how to handle them, and I kept silent, and I let them go just to keep our family together. Mm-hmm. And my children are all grown up. I have grandchildren, and we're just being torn apart because, you know, I let, mm-hmm. I did not put my foot down and try and stop those issues.
Has he turned away from those things, or is he still doing those things?
He says he loves me enough to let go of them, but I haven't seen real changes, you know, because mm-hmm. we're still separated. Right. I'm afraid to go back home because I'm afraid they're going to redevelop. And
right.
I have to find a way to put my foot down and say they're not okay what he's been doing. And, you know, I was wrong to let them go for so long.
Right. So he's not hitting you. Is he still doing other forms of violence, like verbal violence? Is he berating you or belittling you verbally?
In some ways, he's really good at it now. You know, it's almost narcissistic that.
Good in the sense that he's gotten better, or he's perfected the art of belittling you.
He's perfected the art, and it doesn't sound like belittling me. He sounds like he's edging me on to be a good person, mm-hmm. whereas he's not accepting responsibility for his own fault.
I see. So you're the one that needs to be corrected. He does everything right.
Right, exactly. I'm always the mm-hmm. wrong person.
Okay. Well, from what you've told me, and I can only venture a guess here, but my general impression is that you're in a position of power insofar as you could say to him, listen, the reason I left in the first place is because you're out of control in this area, in this area, in this area, and whatever. And I'm not going to live with you living in fear or constantly being under reproach or, you know, whatever the issues are specifically. Your drinking is out of control, whatever. So you're my husband. I love you. I don't like what you're doing. When we got married, we pronounced our vows before God and the church. We promised God and the church and each other that we would be together until death do us part. You know, from this day forward, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health, until death do us part. That's what we vowed. So I'm going to uphold my vow, but I'm not going to live with you under the same roof if you're going to carry on this way. Now, if you're willing to stop and get real, then we can talk about it. And if things get better, then I can come home. But until and unless they get better, I'm not going to come home. I mean, you have the right to live okay. free from fear. That's why I asked you if he was being violent, you know. And there are different forms of violence, obviously, but you have a right to not have to live in fear. And if he's making the living conditions impossible for you to live under the same roof, then you have the right to remove yourself from that bad situation. You're still married, of course, presuming your marriage is valid, and there's no reason not to think so. So I would not go through with the divorce, but rather just say, okay. you know, if you want to live in limbo like this, that's not what I want. But if you want to improve things and really show me by your actions that you are serious about being married to me and living with me, then these are the things that I need to see. Now, okay. I don't say that. I'll just add one thing, Barbara. I don't say that because sometimes in a relationship, the one party or the other can dictate terms to the other one. And sometimes the grievances are not real. Now, I'm not saying that in your case, but I've seen situations where the husband or the wife will dictate terms to the other one. And here's what I expect. And you better do this, and you better do this, and you better do this. And often that's just the person wanting to get his own way. But I don't suspect that that's what's going on here. He's actually doing things that are harmful to you and to the marriage, and you're just simply saying, until you stop, I'm not going to live under the same roof with you.
Okay. Because I've in my separation where I'm at, I feel like I'm doing the right thing to bring this up after all these years and to let him know that it's not okay to continue the way he has been. And right. I am doing okay where I am. And I have allowed him to come back and talk to me about our situation. So
That's good.
Yeah.
It's good that you're keeping the dialogue open.
I am willing to hear him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm willing to reconcile, but yeah, I see what you're saying, that I'm not ready to go home with under those conditions. Mm-hmm. And I see what you're saying. I think I agree with what you're saying. And thank you very much.
You're
I
welcome.
I really appreciate it.
Have you ever looked into a retrovite weekend? Does that ring any bells?
We did attend one of those.
Oh, did you?
We did attend.
Got
in 2016, we went, I enjoyed it very much. It was very insightful. I don't know if he learned that much or he expected me to handle it and to carry the, you know, everything forward on my shoulders. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, sometimes
anyways,
they can really help
so
couples.
Much.
You're welcome. I will say a prayer that things work out well.
Oh, I would appreciate your prayer so much. Thank you.
You can count on it. Thank you, Barbara. Yeah, I hope that things can be mended. I really do. 888-914-9149. How about Maria now in Newburgh, Oregon? Good morning, Maria.
Good morning. Hi, Patrick. So my question is, or I guess, I don't know, I just need some guidance. My nephew, he has struggled with transgender issues before. Okay. He did stop. My sister. So his mom is a very devout Catholic. You know, she's, I know she, you know, this killed her when she found out about it. At that time, which was maybe 5 years ago, when the whole transgender era was starting to come up, you know. I was kind of like a cafeteria Catholic or just a Catholic on Sundays. I've had a true reversion. But at that time I did just say, you know what? I was very liberal. And then I had my own reversion back to the faith. And I knew in my heart when I was like participating in like his lifestyle and everything, I knew in my heart it was wrong, but I didn't want him to feel like he was unloved. And I think that that's what a lot of people safe when they come with like a gay person in their family or something. So he, ever since in a couple years later, he kind of left that lifestyle. And, you know, he's doing great and everything and never said anything about, like, how he left his that life. And
let me just say there's a break coming shortly, and I know you have a question to ask. What's the question?
Right. So how do I deal with, because he is having these ideas again, and he thinks that that's just how he is. So how do I deal about going along with it? Because now I'm dealing with it with, like, with my faith. You know, and I'm not accepting it, but telling him I love him, but I don't accept that part of you. And he's not religious. He's just like, well, God loves everybody and he loves me. He made me this way. I'm like, no, God does not make, you know, I don't know how to.
I have some suggestions. Suggestions.
That's what I need. Your suggestions.
Okay. So start with two books. If you have a pen handy, this write these titles down. The first one is called Irreversible Damage by Abigail Schreier, S-H-R-I-E-R. And in the second book is called When Harry Became Sally, and that's by Ryan Anderson.
Ryan Anderson, okay.
Right. And these two books deal with the phenomenon of gender dysphoria and many other related aspects of it. So my advice would be for your own, starting with you, for your own knowledge, read either or both of these books and get up to speed in terms of what this is all about, and, you know, get the facts clearly in your mind so you'll be in a better position to discuss this with him. In fact, in these books, it gives you recommendations on some things you can do in conversation, some ways that you can talk about this to help the other person see where you're coming from. Then I would, after you've read them, I would, for your own sake, I would decide if you wanted to give him one or the other or both of these books. I'd start with one or the other, and maybe When Harry Became Sally would be the right one for him. And then say, here's a book that really helped me. I was really, you know, wondering about a lot of things, and this book gave me a lot of information. The next thing I would recommend is a website called Sex Change Regret. So write that one down. Okay, Sex Change Regret. Mm-hmm. And the man who's here, his name is Walt Heyer, H-E-Y-E-R. He was, I mean, he's a man, but he went the transgender route and he lived as a woman for 8 years. And he had the operations and he did the whole thing. And now he's on the other side of all that, explaining why he realizes it was a mistake. And he also points out that many, many people who go down that road wind up regretting it later. So that's something that you could share with your with your nephew, say, listen, even though you feel this way now, you may have a very different perspective on this in another year, 5 years, 10 years. And I think that would be another great resource to give him. I've got to take a break, I'm afraid, but I hope that's helpful to you, Maria. Give those books a try. Give that website a try. Again, it's called sexchangeregret.com. Thank you. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
We are back. And not for long, because the show's going to be over in about 10, 12 minutes. Let's get to Carol in Fort Myers, Florida. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
My second grader daughter was in the class of a science class doing a volcano with Play-Doh. And in the cup of the Play-Doh, the teacher put some vinegar. Then the teacher, Tyson, said the class, drink it. And my daughter did it, because she didn't know that she was choking. And then she says, Miss, I finished. And then when she finished, the teacher said, oh, it was a joke, because it had remains of Play-Doh and everything in the cup, besides the vinegar. And I really felt upset because my daughter had a G-tube for 6 years until 6 months ago, and she knows it. And also she eats blended food. She doesn't know too much about flavors. And I wrote an email to the teacher because my daughter didn't know what was it. She thought that it was a Sprite or a soda or something like that. She didn't know what was it. And she told me that it was vinegar. And she asked me forgiveness for the situation, that she didn't thought that she was not going to take it as a joke. But she's in second grade. And I don't know what to do because the teacher also complains that she has ADHD because of a growth hormone problem that she has. And she complains.
Your daughter does, or the teacher does?
Yes, my daughter.
Okay.
And the teacher complains always that she's distracted, but she's on medicine because she needs the growth hormone and also for the distraction thing. But she does not disrupt the class because she's always sitting down in her place. It's just that she gets distracted,
right?
You know.
So what's the question? I know there's a question in there somewhere. What is the question?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I want to know what should I do if I should go farther with the teacher, or how should I manage it? What would you do in my situation?
Okay, so is your concern that the teacher jokingly or not jokingly told your daughter to drink the vinegar that had Play-Doh in it? And, okay. Well, I mean, do you think she's telling the truth, that she really did say it jokingly?
Well, I think that probably she's joking. What I think is that a teacher for a second grader shouldn't joke in that way because children at that age are not mature enough to distinguish those things.
Yeah, so maybe what you can do is write a letter to the principal of the school and say, on such and such a date, the teacher of my daughter told her, she claims jokingly, to drink the vinegar that had been used for this class project. And my daughter, you know, obviously nobody wants to drink vinegar, and had other things in it too, and it was very irresponsible, and I tried to talk to the teacher about it, and she doesn't seem to want to take responsibility for it. So I'm letting you, the principal, know that this happened, and I'd like to know what you're going to do about it. And then let the principal tell you, oh, I'm going to tell her to stop it, or I'm going to give her a warning, or, you know, I mean, whatever they wind up doing. And if that's satisfactory to you, then great. If it's not satisfactory to you, then you could ask your daughter to be moved to a different class. There are a variety of options that you can use. I agree with you that that's an inappropriate thing for a school teacher to say to a child, and I can't imagine what kind of joke she must have been thinking she was making. That doesn't seem very plausible to me. So I would run it up the flagpole, let the principal know about it, see what happens. If you're happy with what happens, great. If you're not happy with what happens, then maybe look to moving your daughter out of that class. I'm not sure what else to say. I do remember one time when I was in the, I don't know, I think it might have been the third grade, and I was being persecuted I have dim memories of this, but my mom became aware that I was being sort of persecuted by a teacher, and it was unjust, and she talked to the teacher, and the teacher kept doing it, so they just took me out of that class and put me in a different class. Problem solved. So, you know, it's inconvenient, but it's not difficult to overcome, I don't think. That's what I'd recommend, Carol. I hope that's helpful to you. Let's go now to Jeff in Clearwater, Florida. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Patrick. How are you?
Thanks I am
well,
thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First time caller. I'm calling for my wife, my lovely soulmate of 30 years, and we're prayer warriors. So, you know, we say our rosary daily, and we do dedicate decades to, you know, there's so many prayers that need answered today. So her question was, Susie, we're born with a soulmate, or a soulmate, oh, here I go. We're born with a guardian angel, and over the years, we're family and friends passed and acquaintances. Could those also be looking after us as well as guardian angels, or is that something? And I guess this, I don't know if this is an opinion or what, but.
Do you mean human beings?
So many, guardian angels. Yeah, okay. Like, say, so her mother passed at 55, mm-hmm. and she was an absolute saint, Catholic, you know, wonderful woman, passed of brain cancer early. And really feel that she's looking after us and whatnot. And
I see. Well, in the strict sense, they don't become guardian angels, because angels are a different category of being altogether, different from human beings altogether. So they don't become guardian angels, if that's what you're wondering. We do have guardian angels. That's true. The ministering servants that God sends or appoints to help us. That's true. If your loved one is in hell, God forbid, then obviously there's nothing they can or would even want to do to help you. If that person is in purgatory, they're unable to do anything to help you. And if they're in heaven, they're not looking after you the way the angels are, but they are praying for you. So in that sense, they're interceding for you in heaven, but that doesn't make them angels. And it doesn't make them the equivalent of a guardian angel, because they're not. It's not as though, you know, grandpa is hovering in the ether above you, keeping an eye on you. Human beings don't have that duty appointed to them by God. They are with God in heaven. Those who are in heaven, they see him face to face and they're interceding. But it's the angels who are sent as these special guardians, not human beings in that sense.
Okay, that helps me out. It's probably not what she wanted to hear, but it's good to know.
I know.
But we love you, and thank you for all your prayers and whatnot, and thanks for
thank
what
you,
you do
Jeff.
For us. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Please say some of those prayers for me. I sure appreciate it when people do that.
We do every day. We do
thank
every
you.
Day.
I am most grateful to you both. Thank you. How about Patricia in Holland, United States? Where is Holland, United States? What town or what state is that in?
Pennsylvania.
Got it. Okay.
Holland, Pennsylvania. I'm teaching 7th grade CCD for the very first time, answering a call, great need that they needed a catechist. And two questions have come up that I've answered, and I just would like to have your take on it and maybe a little bit extra information that maybe I could give the children. One of them was, we were talking about the temple being destroyed in 70 AD, and one of the students raised their hand and said, oh, no, we don't call it AD anymore. It's Common Era, after Common Era, and BC, you know. And so I explained to them that they were really taking, and they said it's because they didn't want to offend any other religions. So, you know, I let them know that it was named that because of Jesus, the time that he lived. And I just wonder, that's one question, if I could have added anything more. I don't know if I really explained it adequately, but I was very definite that I did not agree with Jesus being brought out of B.C. and A.D.
So AD it stands for Anno Domini, the year of our Lord, and it's the custom until lately. I mean, it may be waning now, but it's been the custom for quite a long time to refer to the year of our Lord, you know, 2021, Anno Domini. And it's not only respect for Jesus, but also it denominates the time after his birth compared to before. And I will always say that because I am a follower of Jesus. So I personally don't care if a Muslim or a Hindu or an atheist or whoever is offended that I say Anno Domini or AD 2021. I don't care. If he's offended, I don't care. Jimmy crack corn and I don't care. Nor am I offended if that person doesn't want to use AD and instead uses CE. It doesn't bother me. I'm not offended by it. So I'm not going to ask them to change the way they speak to suit my preferences, and I'm not going to change the way I speak to suit their preferences. So I would just tell the kids that, you know, this is a way of honoring Jesus, and it's traditional, and people, you know, Christian and non-Christian, have been using this format for quite a long time, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and I don't think it's broke.
Okay. That's good. I feel better because it was concerning to me that they were being taught that in that way. But no, I get it. The other question is, oh, my goodness, they've been bringing up, you know, the end of the world, hell, all kinds of things have been coming out. But one question was, a boy wanted a list of mortal sins. And, you know, I know for a fact most of them don't go to church every week. the parents drop them off, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one thing. And I just don't know. I didn't know exactly how to answer it. So I did kind of get around it, but I could use some guidance. I actually mm-hmm. called my our parish priest, and he just hasn't gotten back to me yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I can help on that one. There is no such list. If you start with the Ten Commandments, of course, you can commit many different kinds of sins related to each of the commandments. There are different ways you can offend against the commandment. So my answer to the young man would be, any time that you are freely choosing to do something that you know is contrary to what God wants, it's contrary to God's law, and it's a serious issue, and you do it anyway, that's a mortal sin. So it can be spread across the Ten Commandments, and I suppose it's almost endless in terms of the different permutations, but that's about as far as we can say. I wish you had more time, Patricia. Thank you, and my thanks to all of you who called today. I appreciate it. Look forward to being with you again very soon, and I will be praying for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.